sitting on my table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
Equality.
Equality.
Remedy. Protection.
Fairness.
Fair trial.
Privacy.
Right.
Will.
Peace.
Movement.
Movement.
This is my mistake. Let me make it good. I raised the wall. I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
Expression. Expression.
Expression.
Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Progress.
Culture.
Human rights.
Charter Dana.
Solid.
Gathering.
Responsibility.
Fill in the border. I raise the wall. And I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. We can also be heard on Sastel Max at channel 806 and Access Communications Digital Service at channel 341. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name is Jim Hutchings, and today I'm joined by my co-hosts Brian Brocheza and Crystal Giesbrecht. Welcome, Crystal. Welcome, Brian.
Oh, thanks, Jim.
Thank you.
Going to be talking about Right for Rights, and this is an event that's it's basically held on the anniversary of the Declaration of Human Rights, I think, which is December 10th, and we have an event on December 10th, but the event that we're going to mostly talk about today is our own Amnesty Group's event on December 9th. So, Crystal, what's happening?
Our event is on December 9th at the Artful Dodger. And what we are doing is it's a come-and-go event from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. We have a number of speakers. We have activists, lawyers, and people who've been personally affected and helped by Amnesty International's work. So the main point of this event is letter writing. We want everyone to come out and write letters, and then in between there will be short talks from the speakers I just mentioned, kind of about every half hour or so, and in between we have a number of local musicians performing as well.
Okay, if somebody comes to this event, now you say letter writing, that scares a bunch of people. I remember writing letters in school, and you were taught how to... You know, there are all sorts of different parts to the letter, and you had to do it all right. And just wondering, for somebody that hasn't written letters for a long time, what's involved? I mean, how tough is it?
Not tough at all, actually. This year we're writing letters for 12 cases that have been selected by Amnesty Canada, and we have a case sheet on each one, and it really breaks it down. It gives us a really simple layout of the case, what happened, what the issue is, and it breaks it down as what you should include in the letter. So it'll say how to address it, whether it's to Your Honor or Your Excellency, the main points you want to make in the letter, and then you can pretty much just use that and put it in your own words. So you can feel free to add in if you know a little bit about the country, or you can just use the information that's there on the case sheet. Mm-hmm. So it's really simple, and Amnesty really encourages handwriting letters. So we feel that that, you know, really gets noticed and shows that you put the time and the effort in to send that personal handwritten letter. So we'll be doing them by hand. We're not, you know, it's not fussy as far as formatting and all of that. And there will be lots of Amnesty volunteers there to help people and give letter writing tips as well.
Mm-hmm. You say your excellency and your honor. Now, who are you actually writing to? For example, if you're going to write to somebody, let's say in Colombia or something like that, who might you be writing to?
It depends on the case. So Amnesty does research to figure out who is the person who can actually make the change that we want to see happen, and that's who we contact. But for instance, we're writing for one case in Greece where a journalist was injured by the police. He was reporting on a protest that was going on, and he was injured in really inappropriate behavior by the police. And that event just hasn't been investigated properly. So in that case, we write to the Minister of Justice in that state. So in other ones, we might be writing to Prime Minister Harper. We're writing to the president of one of the territories in Nigeria. So it depends on what the situation is.
Okay, so you say Harper, so it could be an issue in Canada, not necessarily an international issue.
Exactly. One of the cases this year is the case of No More Stolen Sisters in Canada. And Amnesty International is calling for the government to work with national work on a national action plan with Indigenous women's organizations on the issue of missing and murdered Aboriginal women. And as well, there's a Canadian connection in a couple of the other cases. Guatemala's been having problems with mining companies coming in, destroying the environment, making things very difficult for the people who live there. And those are Canadian mining companies who've been involved. And as well, one of the cases in Colombia involves involvement by Canadian companies as well.
So pretty wide range of topics. How effective are these? I mean, you've got a lot of people writing letters. This happens all around the world?
Yeah, that's right. Last year, people joined in Right for Rights in 83 different countries, and 1.4 million letters were written.
Wow.
So, and it is effective. Amnesty estimates that in one-third of the cases, the letter writing brings about a resolution.
Okay, now we've got some audio here. Maybe yes. This would be a time to play something. Can you tell us, Brian, tell us what we're going to listen to first here? Or Crystal.
We are going to listen to, I believe, a video that was produced by Amnesty International that's going to tell us a little bit more about the point of Right for Rights and why people around the world get together to do this every International Human Rights Day.
Excellent. Okay. And this video is actually about one of the people we were writing about, Bong Dong Wei. And it's a promo, as Crystal said, and let's see if we can get that played.
Yes, and actually he's a member of Falun Gong, and he was persecuted in China because of his religious beliefs, and now he's safe in the U.S., so he's working to promote Amnesty International's work.
Police just rushed into my home. They found several Falun Gong books, and nothing else. And this is kind of so-called evidence. And then they put me into a detention center. ...3,300 people died of torture in the labor camp or prisons. They are all Falun Gong practitioners. Two of them are my personal friends. They died of torture in the detention center, beaten to death. Now I know because of the letters from the Amnesty International members, I was not alone. Although I never received any of the letters, I felt the change of attitude of the guards. If they know that the outside world is taking action and care about a certain person, and the condition of this person will be improved. A small group of people in a small town in Sweden wrote a letter for me every week. I was very moved, and I thought this is a very great idea for the Write a Song campaign. Letters can make difference. My personal case is a witness.
Okay, and if I'm not mistaken, he and his family are now living in California. He was given his freedom. And for those of you who didn't catch it, he's a practitioner of Falun Gong, which for some reason or other the Chinese government is very much in opposition to, and they're trying to basically stamp them out. And they're mm-hmm. doing it ruthlessly.
So that's one example of a really of a success story that actually came about from letter writing. If you actually see the video, you can see him tearing up a little bit when he's describing about the letters that he received from that small group of people who were just writing for him. So it's really powerful.
Yeah, basically a bunch of letter writers in Sweden that just went hard there every week, putting the pressure on. It's hard to imagine a Swedish village putting pressure on the Chinese government, but that's exactly what happened, along with all the other letter writing that was happening at the same time. And they finally got tired of receiving all those letters.
That's right.
Good things happen.
Excellent. So let's talk about Right for Rights in the context of amnesty. Crystal, could you tell us a little bit more about that, and why are we celebrating it on, why are we holding it on December 10th as we normally do?
Sure. So the reason we hold it on December 10th is because it is to mark the anniversary of International Human Rights Day. And so it's always on or around December 10th. As we mentioned earlier, we'll be hosting our event on the 9th, and there is another event on the 10th as well, which we'll talk about later. But the point of this event is really to bombard the authorities with a pile of letters all at the same time. So everyone around the world gets together on the same day, writes letters for these 12 cases. That amounts to 1.3 million letters being sent for these 12 cases. And it really gets noticed. And, you know, for example, when the government in China sees that people in Sweden care about this one person who is locked up unjustly, that really gets noticed. So we just want to get as many people together as we can, to write as many letters as we can, and send those all out around the world.
Okay. One thing I was just going to read here, I was just perusing. I've got a great book here called Steps in the Right Direction, 365 Human Rights, Celebrations and Tragedies and Stuff. And for December 10th, it goes into some detail about the Declaration of Human Rights. I'm just going to read it here for you. Human rights has been a vital part of the United Nations' work from the moment its charter was signed in San Francisco in 1945. Knowing what took place under the Nazis in World War II, nation-states decided to put into a document the need for human rights to be respected and upheld. The United Nations Secretary, General called upon Canadian lawyer John Humphrey to write this document. With the assistance of Eleanor Roosevelt, Jacques Maritain, René Cassin, Charles Malik, and P.C. Chang, and after numerous rewrites and resolutions, the document made its way to the General Assembly. On December 10th, 1948, the UN's General Assembly adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, 30 articles that began with the statement, "The General Assembly proclaims this Universal Declaration of Human Rights as a common standard of achievement for all peoples and all nations." Some 48 countries voted in favor of the declaration, with no country opposing. However, 8 members, including all Soviet Union bloc countries, South Africa, and Saudi Arabia, abstained. Canada found itself in this company when it originally abstained in earlier drafts, but in the end voted in favor. While the declaration is seen as a set of objectives, it is used as a powerful legal and political tool for countries to follow. In 1950, all nations were asked to join in the celebrations of this historic anniversary, and most do, celebrating December 10th as International Human Rights Day.
That was awesome, Jim, and that's exactly why we do this every year on December 10th.
Yep, and we actually have one more video before we go on to break that actually talks about the right for rights. So let's see if we can get that playing.
I have this letter written by my son. It made me feel, well, a bit weepy, but happy to think that he took the trouble to write.
Last week my tooth fell out, and in the morning there's a letter from the tooth fairy. It has my name on.
Dear Leora, I can honestly say you're the most amazing girl I've ever met, and probably the most amazing girl I'll ever know. I keep it because it's the first letter I ever got of this type.
Thank you, Miss Jeffers, for all your hard work and commitment. It was the human touch that I needed on a Monday morning.
I feel very blessed when I get Eileen's cards because it's someone who wants to communicate with me.
I received 6,000 cards and letters from the people for my husband in the prison in Iraq.
A few of us would get together after a pint or a curry and we'd write a letter to whatever urgent action that Amnesty has highlighted around the world.
We just moved to Brighton and Troy was asking how our new home was. And he said, give Lindsay a hug for me.
Keep fighting, Angus. Sincerely, Troy A. Davis.
I was really looking forward to kind of developing a friendship, really. I really hoped that he would actually be free one day and that we'd actually meet.
When I started writing letters regularly for prisons of conscience, it was the discovery that Amnesty had pioneered that whole thing of writing to governments you wouldn't believe took any notice, and yet they did.
I wrote to Pablo for years, and when I met him when he was released, he told me that he had actually received a lot of letters. The effect was amazing. He was very, very touched meeting people that he knew had been writing for him. There's no doubt at all that letters save lives.
I think what that points out is that this letter writing is, it's a really personal kind of one-on-one experience. You're writing this letter, and sometimes the person involved will see the letter. Often they won't, but it's quite a personal experience, especially as you were saying, Crystal, if you take the time and the effort to handwrite it, when something is printed, there's always sort of the possibility that somebody is cranking them out and they don't have the same credibility as a handwritten letter.
It's true.
You know. So that's why I always handwrite mine. Sometimes my handwriting may be a little difficult to decipher, but I think the effect is still there. Okay, well, we've got, I think you said that we're going to have 12 issues that we're going to be writing letters about on Sunday. Could you tell us about some of those issues?
Sure, yeah. There's 12 cases. And something else I wanted to say about this as well is normally when our Amnesty group gets together, as you guys know, we always write letters, usually, to to the person who's going to make the change, as I said, to the premier or the prime minister, or whoever it may be. Something that's a little different about Right for Rights as well is we have addresses for some of these individuals. Mm-hmm. So there's some additional things we'll be doing besides just writing to the government or the leader. Mm-hmm. In those 12 cases, we might send a card to the person who's imprisoned. There's a couple that are take a photo of yourself and send it to them, or make a short video and put it on YouTube. So I just want to point that out too, mm-hmm. that Right for Rights is a little more interactive, and the holiday season is a time when Amnesty does try and reach out to people who are imprisoned and send them those cards as well. So that's really important as well. And yeah, just to talk about some of the cases we'll be working on this year on December 9th, one is in Romania, where just after International Human Rights Day in 2010, 76 families were forcibly evicted, and the government placed 40 of them in a really terrible housing area between the city's garbage dump and a former chemical waste dump. So the conditions are just atrocious, and the other 36 families receive nowhere to live at all. So we're writing to the government in that situation. And another one we're writing for is in Sudan. There's a youth group called Garifna, and they've been speaking out. And the name of their group means we're fed up. And mm-hmm. what they're calling for is nonviolent resistance to the government in Sudan. And because of their activism, they've been arrested, detained, sexually assaulted. Some of them have been tortured. Some are locked up with no communication. So we're also working on that. And now I'm just going to actually let Brian tell you about a couple more of the cases.
Yes, one of the cases here I have in front of me is in the USA. We all know about the Guantanamo Bay issue, and one of them is still a prisoner who is currently in limbo. His name is Hussein Salim Mohammed Amir Fedi, and he has been in custody since 2003 in Guantanamo Bay. The U.S. authorities have yet to bring him to trial, so he's been in detention for all that time, and they haven't charged him with any offense, actually. So it also has been decided that the U.S. government has not shown a preponderance of any evidence that he is linked with Al-Qaeda or any kind of information of that sort. There has been no proof of guilt or anything like that. The judge actually had ruled that his detention is unlawful and had ordered his release in 2010. That was by a district court. And since then, the Court of Appeals have overturned this ruling, and the U.S. Supreme Court has refused to hear his case. So today, Hussein Salim Mohammed is still imprisoned in Guantanamo Bay. So that'll be almost 10 years.
It kind of reminds me of our own Omar Khadr, who until recently was confined in Guantanamo Bay. And the only way he got out was to agree to a plea bargain. He had to plead guilty to whatever the United States wanted him to plead guilty to. And when he pled guilty, he was available then to be transferred back to a Canadian prison. And when we wrote to Canadian authorities, their response was, well, he's pleaded guilty to these serious offenses. Well, you know, he had no choice.
Mm-hmm.
If he wanted to get out of there and not die in Guantanamo, he had to plead guilty to whatever they wanted him to plead guilty to. So I'm really upset with Canadian authorities for making that happen in that manner. And I have written letters.
Yeah, that's right. That case was extremely upsetting. And this one as well, and the fact that there's not enough evidence to charge him with anything, but he's still sitting there in prison and, mm-hmm. and in Guantanamo Bay, which we know the conditions are atrocious. It's completely unjust.
It just seems very ironic that the more affluent nations of the world who purport to be the leaders in human rights and telling people like the Chinese government that they should improve their human rights record, they're busy doing things like this, which are totally against any concept of human rights. So the people of like the Chinese government, are questioning where we feel, where we can think that we have a leadership role when we look in our own country and see the things that we're doing here. Anyway, that's my thought. All right, well, we've got about a minute and a half before the bottom of the hour. Let's take our break now. And then we'll have some music afterwards. I was at a concert with Rodney DeCrew a month or so ago, and really liked him, so I've picked a piece, and we'll have a listen to that on the other side of the break. Yeah, Rodney DeCrew was in Regina, I think a couple of months ago, and I bought a CD, and he's quite an impressive songwriter, singer, artist, and I guess not all that well known because we were on the club side, and there weren't very many people there, which has kind of astonished me. So that was When I Was a Boy from his CD entitled War-Torn Man. He has an interesting life, and a lot of his songwriting derives from that. So, what are we talking about now, Brian?
Oh, well, we started talking about some of the current issues we're working on for the Rights of Rights thing that's going to happen on Sunday. So we still have a couple more current examples. I'm going to ask Crystal to lead us to a couple of more of those.
Sure, yeah. I think it's really important to talk about these so that people have an idea of why we need to write these letters and what we're going to be doing on Sunday. So another one that we're writing for is a man named Chiu Ho-shun, and he lives in Taiwan. And he has been on death row for 23 years. He has been incarcerated since 1988 for a murder that there's no evidence that he committed. He says he didn't commit, and himself and co-accused were tortured into confessing. So he's been on death row all this time. He never knows how much longer that he'll be alive. And Amnesty feels that he's incarcerated unjustly, so we're calling to see him freed. Another case is in Libya, where after the uprising, militia from one community attacked another town because they felt that that the inhabitants of that town had sided with the government during the conflict. So they burned down their houses. They've been hunting them wherever they go, you know, even in hospitals. So there's just nowhere safe for the people of this community to go, and they're really being wiped out. So we're calling for protection for them as well. And now I'm going to ask Jim to tell us about the next one.
Okay, we're going to South Africa for this one. And this is for LGBTI people. You would hope that you would be safe returning from a night out with friends, but Noxolo Nagwaza was raped, beaten, and stabbed in the dark, apparently because of her sexual orientation. The attack happened as she headed home in the early hours of Easter Sunday, 24th of April, 2011, and her attackers then left her lifeless body in a drainage ditch. So far, little progress has been made into investigating how this happened and who was responsible. And I've just found out now how to pronounce her name. It's Nokolo. It's spelled with an X. Oh, well. And anyway, she lived and died in Kwathema, a township east of Johannesburg. As an activist for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and intersex rights, she faced homophobia on a daily basis, living with the constant threat of violence. In South Africa, homophobic taunts, insults, and threats are so frequent that many LGBTI people do not even recognize them as a form of violence. Incidents of sexual assault and murder of lesbian women occur among persistent high levels of violence against women in general. Gay men and trans women are not immune to incidents of targeted violence. Stable and well-paid jobs eluded her, but Nokolo did the best she could to provide for her children. An avid soccer fan, Nokolo played street soccer from her early teens and decorated the room she shared with her daughter with posters of her favorite team. Although she never finished her schooling, she was also an avid reader. So there's one. And then we have one from Iran, a call for a release of outspoken human rights defender, Narges Mohammadi, a women's rights activist, mother of twins, professional engineer, journalist, fan of Iranian music, and avid mountain climber. She's twice ascended Iran's highest mountain, Damavand. But Narges is not free to enjoy these pursuits. She's marking Human Rights Day 2012 in custody. She's serving a 6-year prison sentence that began on the 22nd of April of this year. She had been in Tehran's Evin prison, but on May 16th at 6 a.m., agents woke her up, blindfolded and handcuffed her, placed her in a car, and she was unaware of what was going on during the long-distance travel to Zanjan prison in northwest Iran. The remote location is tough for her, since her mother-in-law is looking after her 5-year-olds in Tehran, and family visits would be hard to organize. She had been the executive chairperson of the Center for Human Rights Defenders in Tehran, and the Iranian authorities forcibly closed the center in December of 2008, just as the members were about to celebrate the 60th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Since then, several of its members have been harassed, arrested, and sentenced to lengthy prison terms. So there's two. Have we got time for one more?
Yes, we do.
Well, let's do it. In Colombia, we have Nora and the survival of indigenous peoples at risk. Nora Dominico is a leader of Embera Catillo indigenous women who live with their families along the Sinú River in northern Colombia. In October of this year, Nora traveled to Colombia's capital to add her voice to a massive gathering of indigenous peoples organized to confront grave threats to their very survival. I think we had an exhibition of people who were there at that, if I'm not mistaken, we had of Colombian people at the university.
The photos.
Our exhibit?
Yeah, that's right. And they're actually, the photos of the indigenous people in Colombia are being shown in Moose Jaw this year for December 10th.
Awesome. So they've got those pictures. We had them here a little while ago.
That's right.
Yeah. For Nora's people, the trouble began when a huge dam was built across the Sinu River. Millions of dollars in financing from Canada's Export Development Corporation supported work on the project by a Canadian company. Fish stocks above the dam vanished. Other sources of food disappeared when land was flooded to create the dam's reservoir. Hunger and malnutrition have reportedly coincided with disease and death. I don't know about you, but as a Canadian, I am troubled to have my country associated with that kind of devastation. Efforts by the Embera Katio to speak out against what was happening brought repression and attacks. Army-backed paramilitaries murdered beloved leaders like Kimi Pernia, Domenico, spreading terror. The violence did not stop there. There have been more threats and murderous attacks by both paramilitaries and guerrillas, and terrifying incursions by soldiers. I can imagine having soldiers come into my village, into my home, and you don't know what's going to happen, and you cannot do anything. In addition, people have to deal with the ever-present danger of stepping on landmines planted in their territory. People continue to be killed, said Nora, her face lined with anxiety. It is so hard, so painful. We do what we can to defend our lives and our future. So that's very troubling, and the most troubling thing to me is that Canadian government, corporations, and business are directly or indirectly involved in that. So definitely something I'm going to be writing letters about on the 10th.
Exactly.
Or the 9th.
Both. And we're lucky in Canada that we are able to write amnesty letters to our own government and to speak out about things that are happening in our own country or that our country is involved in. In some countries, you can't do that. In some countries, amnesty members only work on cases outside of their own country. So we're lucky here that we have the freedom to be able to stand up for these things. If something's going on here and we're not happy about it, we can take action.
Right. So I suppose in those other countries, it's the government does not want fingers pointed at them, and they're quite emphatic about it.
That's right.
And here, government's not happy about us, but you know, it's a right that we have.
Exactly. And we're able to question and we're able to have dialogue with our government about what we believe is right. And we can ask those questions. So we're lucky here, you know, and there's still obviously things that need to be worked on and we're not there yet, but.
Okay. So have we got time for one more video?
We have a video here by Jeremy Irons, and he actually talks about letter writing and his experience through it. Maybe they'll help us describe what letter writing's about.
Let's hear from Jeremy.
That sounds good.
I've done a lot of things. 4 years, I've laughed a lot. I've fallen in love, I've fallen out of love. I've done things I'm ashamed of, I've done things I'm proud of. I have 2 children that I've watched grow. I've smoked a lot, I've drunk a little. I've made a fool of myself often. I've worked as a builder. I've worked as a storeman. As an actor, I played kings, I played musketeers, I played rogues, I played vagabonds, I played Bruce Willis's baddie, and chased him around New York. Driven too fast, too often, I played my piano when I fancy it. I've met some amazing people. I married one of them. Presidents and prime ministers and people down the pub. I've had lunch with Princess Diana. Told me I was smoking too much. She was right. And I travel so much that sometimes I wake up and I don't know where I am for a moment or two. Different places, different people, different weathers, different smells. I've sung at the Albert Hall. I've sung in the bath. I'm not sure which was the most successful. I've fallen off my boat, drawn the curtains to see what the weather's like, and then thought, what shall I do today, or what shall I wear today? I've hitchhiked across Europe with nothing but my guitar on my back. I've done things that I couldn't tell you. Another man, Hakamada Iwa, has spent every one of those 44 years in a jail cell under constant threat of execution.
So that was Jeremy Irons, and he was actually talking about the case of Hakamada Iwa, who was a former Japanese professional boxer. And basically what had happened was that he was sentenced to death in June 10, 1966 for mass murder. However, he has also been suspected to be falsely charged, and which is also why he hasn't been executed at this time. As Jeremy Irons had mentioned, it has been 44 years, and basically, he's also one of the people that Amnesty has been writing about as well. So that is what we do at Amnesty. We write all these letters, and it does bring comfort to the people who are on the receiving end, particularly if they're not the government officials we're writing to directly, but the people who are trying to encourage and basically say we're here for them. And it does bring a lot of personnel connection, like you guys have mentioned earlier on. Yeah.
I'd just like to say, though, that just because you don't see instant results, you shouldn't be discouraged when you're writing letters, because sometimes it takes quite a while.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what Amnesty found, is that some countries are much more willing to make change than others. It takes longer in other countries. And as well, some high-profile people continue to be harassed or repeatedly arrested even after they're released. So even if there is a positive resolution after a letter-writing campaign, Amnesty still has to keep an eye on that case and make sure that that individual remains safe.
Excellent. I know we mentioned it a little earlier in the first half of the show, but Crystal, could you talk about a little bit more of how or does letter-writing work, and any examples to that effect?
Yeah, and that's something we get asked a lot. People want to know, does Amnesty's work? Do we get results from writing these letters? And we do. Amnesty estimates, as I said before, that about one-third of the cases we write for do see positive results. And we know this because often people... Amnesty follows up on the cases. We know when someone's been released, and often people come forward and talk about their experience. But a couple that we wrote letters for at last year's Right for Rights event had some really positive resolutions. So it's good to share those examples, and then everyone who wrote letters for these people knows. So one of those that you guys remember writing for was Jean-Claude Roger Mbede, and he is a man in Cameroon who was serving a 3-year prison sentence strictly because of his sexual orientation. So after the letter-writing campaign in December, he was granted a provisional release. He's still waiting for his appeal hearing, and his case isn't resolved yet, but it's positive that he was released from custody, and Amnesty continues to monitor his case. Another one from Right for Rights last year was Jabbar Salavan, who's a youth activist and blogger in Azerbaijan. And he was imprisoned because of his postings on Facebook, which called for a day of protest against students being arrested for peacefully protesting against the government. So as part of Right for Rights 2011, over 130,000 letters were sent to the Azerbaijani government, and he was released later that month. So, unfortunately, he was recently conscripted to the military, even though the law states that he's exempt because he's a university student. He was only given 2 hours notice instead of the usual 10 days to get ready. So because of this, Amnesty is calling for him to be released from military duty and continue at university. So that's an example of something really positive, because his case was quick. He was released from custody very quickly after Right for Rights, but also shows us that there's still work to be done and these cases still need to be monitored.
One thing I'd like to comment on here, you're talking about the way Amnesty monitors, and this is really at the heart of everything that Amnesty does. They do an awful lot of fact-checking before they they give us their list of urgent actions that they want us to write letters about. There's no guesswork there. We actually have people on the ground. Our own Secretary General Alex Neve and others go to these countries where the human rights violations have been alleged, and they confirm one way or the other what's going on.
That's right. That's really important to note, because people want to know, how do we know this is for sure, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And an amnesty always verifies the information and works with organizations in those countries to keep up to date after they've left that location as well. So that's really an important thing for letter writers to know. Where are we getting this information?
Yeah, it's very credible sources, and we're very careful. What else do we have there?
Well, I wanted to read a quote from another person who Right for Rights helped. This is from Father Sola Lindy, who is featured in Right for Rights 2010. So he was being harassed for protecting the rights of migrant workers in Mexico. And he said, "Amnesty International members are living proof that this world can be a better place. I would like to thank the members for taking time out of their lives to protect us." So anyone who wrote in 2010 might remember Father Sola Lindy's case. And that's just another really positive example of someone whose life was saved because of writing letters.
And I suppose people listening here right now, they're wondering what they can do. And, of course, letter writing is a big part of it. And letter writing goes on all year round. You know, we have our own letter writing sessions at the Atlantis Coffee House on Tuesday nights at 7. And we have varying numbers of people. It's a small group. And if more people come, we'll have to find a bigger area. But so far, Atlantis is fine.
Yeah, we can always pull up more chairs.
Yes. And so we do that every week. And then we have special events like what we're going to have on Sunday on the 9th. And I'm not that familiar with what's happening on the 10th. We'll talk about that in a minute. But then there, you know, we have our own group here in Regina, Regina Group 91, and we do various things. We show up at events with our table, with information, with petitions. That's another thing that that is effective. You can sign petitions, which we then collect up and send to the people that need to know about what's going on, and you can donate money. We don't often mention this, but it costs money to run an organization like Amnesty International. It is international. We do have travel and other expenses incurred to send people to the different countries to do the monitoring, to do the investigating, to see what's going on, where these things are happening, and there's no other way to do it. You can't take anybody's word for it, so we actually have to go and send trained, experienced people there to do the investigating. It all costs money, so we appreciate any donations that you want to make. You can do it online. You can donate to Amnesty Canada. You can donate locally, and we're happy for any donations that you feel you're able to make. So there.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And there is more information about donating on the Right for Rights website as well, which is writeathon.ca. And some people do fundraising efforts along with their Right for Rights. Mm-hmm. So some people have collected pledges and they're raising money for December 10th. So for our group here, as you guys know, we just want to get people out and write lots of letters. And that's mm-hmm. where we focused our event. But some people are doing it as a fundraiser as well, right, and collecting pledges. And people can do that as an individual as well. You don't need to be part of an Amnesty group to raise money for Amnesty to write letters or to collect pledges. So,
and having said that, our event on Sunday is free.
That's right.
So you can go there. You don't have to worry about somebody at the door looking for money.
Exactly. All we want is for you to put a pen to paper, write a letter, and try to save a life. Write one letter, write a letter for all 12 cases, but that's all we want from you. And hear some good music and listen to some really empowering talks as well.
Exactly. Maybe we could talk about what's going on the 9th. The 10th, the next day, the Monday.
Certainly. So on the 10th, there is a Word Up Letter Slam for Human Rights Day, and that is on Monday evening at the Creative City Center, which is downtown on 1843 Hamilton Street. Doors open at 7, The show is at 7:30, and the admission is $5. So this event is honoring the memory of Ken Sarowiwa, who is a poet, defender of the environment, and a leader of the Ogoni people in Nigeria. So this event is being put on by Amnesty International, SCIC, and the Creative City Center. So participants have an opportunity to read letter poems addressed to whoever they want. So you could write a letter poem to someone who is a prisoner of conscience. You could write the poem to the prime minister, to a king in another country. You could write it in general, like to the people in Nigeria whose lands have been damaged by the Shell oil spill. So you can really be creative and write a letter poem about whatever you want. And points are awarded for each letter poem by 5 judges who are selected randomly from the audience. So wow. Keep that in mind. If you come, and you're not a poet, you may end up being a judge.
If you want.
If you want. Yeah. Yes. It's not forced. And the participant with the most points at the end of 3 rounds will take home the title of Regina's Human Rights Letter Slam Champ.
Wow.
And there are prizes for the top 3 slammers. So that one, again, is Monday evening. Doors open at 7 p.m. at the Creative City Center. And if you want more information about that or the other event on the 9th, which we'll talk a little more about as well, all of that is on our Amnesty Saskatchewan website and also on our Amnesty Saskatchewan Facebook page. So you can get a hold of us if you want more details or you forget where to go.
And last time I looked, I think they were still looking for more participants in the slam.
That's right.
So,
yeah.
If you feel so inclined, don't be shy.
Mm-hmm. But you can also go there and just enjoy
and just listen.
Enjoy and watch and listen.
Yeah.
So you're like you guys mentioned, it's not necessary for you to participate. So you could just come enjoy and have fun, some refreshments as well.
And it's another place, I think, if you haven't been there, you should just go and see what's going on, because it is an interesting location. And, it's
Creative City Center.
The Creative City Center, and there's a very broad number of sort of artistic things that are happening there, and this is just one of many. So you're definitely welcome. I'm going to be there.
As will I, and I know mm-hmm. Brian will be too.
I'll be there too.
And as another plug for our Sunday event at the Artful Dodger, if you haven't been to the Artful Dodger yet, you want to check it out because it is such a cool space. We were really lucky to be able to host a bit of an after party there after our Amnesty International Regina conference in October. Mm-hmm. And they were so gracious to let us host it there. And it's just a really, really cool space. So you've probably been wanting to check it out and go eat their food and see their art and do that anyway. So come on December 9th. Mm-hmm.
It is a wonderful venue, no doubt about it. Yeah, I've been there a number of times since. And it's very, very comfortable, good sound. And there are many interesting audio, music. There's good music there.
Yeah, and as mentioned, we're going to have a couple of bands playing, so that's going to...
Right, we're going to have good music there as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And while the event is free, some of the refreshments and...
Food, of course.
You'll probably need to pay for that, but that's about it, though.
That's right. So, yeah, there will be... there is a refreshment bar, and I believe there will be some food available for purchase.
Yeah, it's always nice to host events at places where there is food and drink, because like we say, it's a come-and-go between 1 and 5, so you can just come and write some letters and leave. We want you to stay longer, because then you'll hear all the speakers, but, you know, you can have a bite to eat, have coffee, do all of that while you're there as well.
And please don't be intimidated by the prospect of letter writing. As we've said a number of times during this program, and I'm going to say one more time, it's really not that difficult, and there'll be lots of people there to help. If you're so inclined, you give it a try. I think it'll be an enjoyable experience for you. So we're going to... Time's up. Believe it or not, the hour has passed. So we're going to close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR. We hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. Thank you to Crystal and Brian for being here. I think
Thanks,
we
Jim.
Had a good time. And
yes, thank you.
We'd invite everybody, if you want information on past and upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to amnestysaskatchewan.ca. Peter Benenson, founder of Amnesty International, said, "Only when the last prisoner of conscience has been freed, the last torture chamber has been closed, the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights is a reality for the world's people, will our work be done."